This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Americans are future-oriented. We like to focus on what's new and what's successful. That's why Silicon Valley and Wall Street seem to get so much attention. The flip side is that we walk away from places that fall behind. We are not so good at figuring out how to pivot and restart. Dayton, Ohio was the Silicon Valley of the early 20th century, an innovation hub leading the way with airplanes, automobile, and cash register technologies. But essentially, especially since the Great Recession, Dayton has faced daunting issues. A Frontline ProPublica documentary in its Left Behind America series, broadcast last week, used Dayton as a case study of smaller and mid-sized American cities that have fallen on tough times. Lost manufacturing jobs, disinvestment, dilapidated neighborhoods, and a scourge of heroin and opioid use. To discuss what's happening in Dayton that may tell us how small manufacturing-based cities can craft a new future, we are joined by the Dayton Daily News investigative and community impact director, Samantha Summer. To join our discussion, you can call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. Samantha, thank you for coming down to Cincinnati. You're a little busy up there in Dayton today because of a debate tonight, right?
Correct. We are the media partners for the first gubernatorial debate tonight at the University of Dayton. So a lot of our staff is very busy working on that right now.
Well, we really appreciate you being here. So what's your reaction to the Frontline documentary? Has Dayton been left behind?
You know, we've had a pretty strong reaction. It really struck a nerve with our community and our readers. We've had a variety of reactions. We've had people who felt that it was a hit job, who believed it did not reflect the full breadth of the community. And we've also had people who believe that it, you know, shined a light on an important part of the struggles that our community faces. We've really seen that reaction across the board from both sides of the debate. What we really think is important is that we are not a media that's parachuting in. We're here every day in this community.
The Dayton Daily News.
Correct. The Dayton Daily News and Cox Media Group. And what we're really focusing on is a new project that we formed called The Path Forward. And what we're doing with that project is trying to tackle the biggest issues in our community, but doing it in a way that looks for solutions and is engaging our community in coming up with what those solutions are. So we have a group of reporters and editors that are focused only on this project. And what we do are digging into the three big issues that we found through our research, through talking to our readers, through focus groups with community leaders. We went out and had one-on-one conversations with community leaders. And what we kind of found were the three big issues that they told us that we needed to tackle were Dayton Public Schools, improving the schools, jobs in the economy, how we make sure we're prepared for the future, and as well as the opioid crisis issue. How do we change our national reputation, which many would argue is unfairly earned as being the overdose capital of the world or country, to how do we become the recovery capital of the, and how do we move past that reputation? So those are the three big issues we're looking at. And we're also digging into that with a community advisory board. These are leaders from across the community, which is something new. A lot of media organizations haven't necessarily done this before, and we haven't either, where we're having these group of leaders come in, and once a month we sit down with them and get feedback from them and talk to them. And in fact, we met today, and we asked them about this documentary and asked them what their reaction to it was. And it also reflected the range of opinions we found in the community. Everyone was very passionate about it. Some were passionate that it did reflect the reality that they see in their daily lives, and some were passionate that it ignored a lot of the positive, upbeat things that are going on in Dayton. You know, while we absolutely have struggled economically in the past 10 years, there's also been a ton of things that have happened in the past 10 years to change that. That includes downtown housing. That includes a brand new entertainment center downtown. And so it's not one reaction. We've seen a ton of reaction.
Well, one of the things that Mayor Nan Whaley, I saw that she said in reaction to the documentary, that it was truthful but not necessarily fair, and made that distinction that she wasn't going to argue about what it pointed out, but would have wished it would have focused on other things that are also happening. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Absolutely. That's definitely a big part of what we've heard, is that no one disputes the facts that were presented in the documentary. You know, we definitely have had an opioid issue. We've had a large number of overdose deaths. We've definitely had a huge loss in manufacturing jobs, particularly in the 2000s. We saw a significant loss of them. But as she pointed out, that it also, though, ignored things like the downtown housing boom. You know, we've had more than 500 housing units built in just the past few years or are under construction right now. And we have a brand new pavilion that's opening up just last month. And so things like that it didn't reflect. We have lots of small businesses and entrepreneurs. We have lots of restaurateurs opening up shop. So it didn't reflect the full fabric of our community
And we've done two programs here the last 6 weeks or so on the Dayton Arcade. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are a variety of ways of looking at a community. To what extent are the problems and the decline in Dayton the fault of national trends that were simply overwhelming? And to what extent do you think that they were the fault of local decision making? Do you think that Dayton could have been – the story in Dayton could have been different, because there's these big contextual issues are hard for any local community to get around.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the Dayton community was definitely affected by national trends. I mean, globalization, the housing crisis, those were things we – definitely saw, and our reporting has shown. You know, we did a big series back in the spring on the Main Street neighborhoods and how that was hugely affected by the foreclosure crisis. So those issues definitely played a part of it. What I think we've seen and what we're trying to focus on with our reporting is, what are the solutions going forward? How are we going to dig into that and positively make a difference in there? And that's kind of what our team is trying to do, is focus on not just solutions, but really trying to make a difference in the community. One of the things that I thought we heard in the documentary that a lot of people kind of did resonate with is that Dayton is a community that isn't so big it can't tackle its problems. It's still a size of a community where people can get their arms around things and make a difference. And so that's what we're trying to focus on moving forward.
Well, let's talk about some of those areas that you've been – and I, by the way, I would highly recommend that people go online and take a look at the articles that you've done with The Path Forward. And there's many articles that have come out of this initiative so far. And if you're interested – and I think that's why I set this up. Dayton was to be treated here as a case study. A lot of the issues that Dayton has – are also issues in Cincinnati and in Northern Kentucky, and it's not isolated to Dayton. But let's take a look at a couple of those. I think one of the things is that, and it was brought up in the documentary, that confuses people is that on the one hand, there's been this huge loss of jobs, especially in the manufacturing area. But at the same time, current employers are having difficulty finding qualified workers. That's certainly a situation here in Cincinnati as well. What's your reporting show that's underneath that disconnect?
You know, we're digging into that just this weekend, actually. We have a big piece kicking off this Sunday that looks at that skills gap.
Didn't know that, but glad to plug it.
Yeah, it's the skills gap issue. And what we're finding is that, yes, there are thousands of job openings right now in the Dayton area, but many of them require advanced degrees, they require certificates, they require some skills. They're not necessarily the types of jobs where, you know, a generation or two ago, you might have been able to graduate high school and walk into a factory floor and get a job that you could support a family on. Today, you need a more training, you need more education.
But not necessarily a college education.
Correct. What we found, a lot of them are things that you could get certificates in or that you could get a 2-year degree in order to do. And that's where there's that gap. And that's what our community is trying to tackle right now. And there are some programs that we highlight that are really going on right now where, for instance, Montgomery County has a program where there's been displaced or laid off workers. They can go in and get you some training for those and get those people back into a new industry. And we talked to a man who lost his job and then became a forklift driver and then also wanted some more experience, so he got his truck driver's license. And so now he, through this program, and so now he is both driving a truck, a forklift to load his truck up, and then he gets in the truck and drives it off. And so that's one of an example of the type of people that we are finding who they've really had to change their whole outlook on their career in order to get those job openings. Because there are, you're right, there's thousands of them right now. But the employers are struggling to find people who have both the technical skills. And then also the other thing we found is that a lot of it's the soft skills. They need people who will show up on time. They need people who, you know, will pass a drug test. So there's a lot of work going on in our schools, actually. And, you know, it starts as early as preschool now that they're starting to talk to children about thinking about jobs, thinking about the future, what it means to show up on time.
You know, that whole question of finding people who can pass the drug test, stay. You have done a whole series of articles in that area as well. So this, it's not just the extreme situation of opioid overdose deaths, but it's also more broadly people who can get a job because they can pass and stay off of drugs, right?
Correct. And what we've found is that, you know, the last year was a overdose numbers were astronomical, but we saw a huge drop off towards the end of the year. So it was really the first half of the year that they were high. And this year they've stayed down. And that's good news that we, you know, the community is really pointing to. And there's a couple things that we believe are part of it. Part of it is increased law enforcement efforts to get the drugs off the street. Part of it is a lot of effort into bringing all the different service providers together in order to try to address this problem, and that they're starting to actually get some national attention for that work, and that and statewide, you know, for being ahead of the curve and trying to respond to this and trying to bring all these different service providers together around a table to come up with solutions for this. And that's part of what we've been examining is how is that working? What other things are out there going on? You know, our next story that we're working on about this is how our community has a ton of veterans, you know, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. We have a lot of veterans up there. The VA Medical Center in Dayton has a lot of programs targeted at substance abuse, mental health treatment, and they're kind of a wraparound service where it's not just in a vacuum. They try to provide all these services around that veteran to try to get them treated, and they've seen some success with that. And so that's what we're digging into next is that a model that could be replicated elsewhere? And that's also a huge part of our population is veterans. So it's a key group of people that they're trying to reach.
Is there evidence that you can point to where Dayton, that statistically does have a real problem on the opioid death scales here, that you're finding programs, approaches that are turning that around?
You know, there's definitely some things that are happening that Cincinnati's doing some of this too, these warm handoff programs, they're called, where you get services right into the ERs, for instance, when someone comes in who's overdosed, and right away you have somebody there who is trying to reach out to that person and get them into treatment programs. That's an example of something that we've been doing up in the Dayton area too that has been making a difference that they believe has really tried to help turn that tide. And a big part of it's also just been increased law enforcement focus on trying to get some of the fentanyl and the heroin off the streets.
Well, you know, that warm handoff is something we did a show on because of new facility in run here by Talbert House here in the greater Cincinnati area, which raises in my mind the question of Cincinnati and Dayton. We're very close to each other. There's a lot of interaction. There's a lot of people who go back and forth every day. They live in Cincinnati and work in Dayton or vice versa, increasingly growing together as a single metropolitan area. Have you begun to look at the patterns in that sort of regional way of how Dayton and Cincinnati might interact on this?
Absolutely. You know, that's actually something we've been reporting on for years, is this kind of CINDE, you know, is this going to be a one community growing together? You know, we grow to the south quite a bit, and our Jobs in the Economy reporter is definitely looking into that and going to keep looking into that because it is a trend that is continuing to grow as Cincinnati grows to the north and Dayton grows to the south.
Yeah, and I think very possibly in the next census, we're going to redefine the metropolitan region. I think the two are going to be put together. But another area that you've been focusing on is Dayton Public Schools. And one of your stories really surprised me, and that was the high, and I don't think this is, I haven't seen this in Cincinnati, the high use of substitute teachers, especially in the lowest performing schools, and let's be frank about it, economically depressed areas and heavily African American areas. Where did that come from, and is a change in that really being made? I know it's been promised by the new superintendent, but is a difference being made?
You know, it's just brand new, their change they're making. So we're going to obviously have to wait to see how that bears out. But you're right. That's one of the things our reporter Josh Swigert uncovered, was that there's an extremely high use of long-term substitutes. Now, these are people who may be in the classroom for months instead of having a permanent teacher. And that just makes it more difficult for those students to learn in, you know, how invested that substitute may or may not be in that classroom and whether they're experts in that subject matter or not. To the new superintendent's credit, she acknowledged that this was a practice that is not helpful for the district and said that they're immediately taking action to change it, including, for instance, that they used to only hire teachers in the summer. And so if an opening came up in December, then a long-term substitute would be assigned to the following summer. They're attacking that now, saying that that's something that they agree has to stop and that they're working on being able to hire teachers year-round now. So this is just a new policy. They just instituted it. So we're definitely going to be keeping our eye on that to make sure that it does actually become implemented that way and to see what difference that makes.
I know that here in Cincinnati, we have the Preschool Promise, but in Dayton, you also are working on early childhood education, have a slightly different model, but that's also a focus to get early education and start changing the path from the very beginning for young people.
Absolutely. You know, the Learn to Earn program in Dayton and the city of Dayton and Dayton Public Schools all acknowledge that the earlier you can get to kids, the more impact you can have on them. And it's interesting, even within our other area of focus with jobs in the economy, what we found is that even in that area, they're trying to reach these kids in preschool to let them to already get their brains thinking about, you know, what it might look like in the future to have a job and what kind of careers are out there. So it never is too early to start having those conversations.
Of course, the other side of that is, you know, something like 50% of the jobs that exist today didn't exist 10 years ago. So by the time those five-year-olds become part of the workforce, who knows what's going to be there?
Right. And what our reporter Lynn Halsey found when talking to employers in Dayton about that was what they're really looking for are people who are problem solvers and critical thinkers. And regardless of what the technical skills that may be needed in the future or that we don't even know about yet, if they're problem solvers and critical thinkers, they'll be able to learn those skills quickly.
You know, when I think of Dayton with your heavy manufacturing past, but a pretty diversified manufacturing past. I mean, in automobiles, but not just one part of the automobile industry, with NCR, National Cash Register, and which took you into the computer area, certainly with airlines and Air Force technology. You were fairly diverse, but you were heavily manufacturing. Detroit, which was so much more a manufacturing, but a single, really even more dominated by a single industry, that is automobile manufacturing, you know, to what extent, and then you got Cincinnati, which always has prided itself in sort of being diversified in terms of a lot of different things with a lot of headquarters here. How do you sort of think about how Dayton ought to think of where it positions itself in the future on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that in the Frontline documentary, one of the criticisms we've heard about it is that it didn't really get into what is going on in the economy locally in terms of innovation and small businesses and the military contractors. That's one of the things that we have that is very unique to Dayton is that we have this high concentration of high-tech military contractors and researchers. You know, Wright-Patt is the single largest site employer in the state of Ohio with more than 20,000 employees there, many of whom are civilians. Mm-hmm. And they're really doing cutting-edge research there. And there are lots of small businesses, all of whom are working on pieces of that. In fact, on our community advisory board, we have one of them who is one of our members, is a startup business that is working in that industry. And so that's a huge growth opportunity that's still there for us that is going to continue to be a base of our economy, I think, and is only a growth model for us. And that's what we've kind of heard from talking to people and looking at our reporting, is that there are opportunities like that out there. Logistics is obviously another big thing that we've really grown into in the past decade or so, especially with the Crossroads of America, with 75 and 70 right there. That's a huge area for us too.
So I think of, with the right pad situation, something that also affects Cincinnati is Confluence, the water technology. You know, there's partners from down here. There's partners at Wright Pat and in Dayton of how do you take water technology out into the private sector and create businesses. So I think we have a great deal of connection here. And First off, it is worth seeing the documentary, but it's also maybe even more important to be reading your series in the Dayton Daily News. So, Sandra Summer, thank you for being here today. Have fun tonight with the gubernatorial debate. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Segment producer is Layla Shakui. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.